show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the weekly show and founder of Yes to Life, the charity working to improve UK cancer care by advocating for integrative medicine, an approach that adds in a whole raft of lifestyle and complementary medicine approaches to support people with cancer in a far more holistic way. I recently came across Dr. Rani Bora, a psychiatrist who struck out in a new direction in search of genuine answers for people facing mental health challenges, something the experience of cancer can be fraught with. Hi, Rani. I was very impressed by your session on the last day of IPM recently, and so I'm really delighted you've accepted my invitation to be my guest on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking me to be on your show, Robin.
All right. So in the UK currently, it's still pretty unusual for an oncology department to have a dedicated psychiatric support for patients. Given what you know about the impact of a diagnosis of cancer, what would you say about this situation?
So here's what I would say. I'm not sure that we need what NHS provides to be exactly that service to be provided in the, for example, the oncology unit or, you know, when someone is diagnosed with cancer. But I definitely know that it's a role for mental health conversations. So that's what I would say, because I am not sure that the usual services that we offer, because I have worked in the NHS for a very long time, and of course now I'm out of the NHS, but given what I know about what's offered, I think it has to be very, very personalized. It's less about the labeling, because I don't think giving a new label or a new diagnosis to people is particularly helpful, but being able to speak to someone who has got experience in helping people going through any like traumatic experiences or a new diagnosis or experiencing grief and loss is very, very important. So that's what I would say in terms of the need for definitely additional support to support someone on a journey when they have been diagnosed with, say, for example, cancer, which is what your podcast is about, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of painfully aware that an awful lot of people tell me they've just blandly given a diagnosis and sent off home, you know, and the worst case is to put their affairs in order with no just sort of business as usual. And, you know, to me, it's always completely shocking that there's not a kind of realization. This is probably the worst thing that person has ever encountered. They've just been through. And they're just left to pick up the pieces themselves. So, I totally agree with you. Yes, I don't know exactly what that support should look like, because it's not my field or anything, but I definitely feel a human being who feels able to support somebody needs to be there specifically for that.
Yeah. So can I ask you a question? Because you know more about supporting people going through a diagnosis of cancer than me. Because you know, this is what your charity is about, and this is what your talk show is about. So currently, when people are given a diagnosis, do they also, is it routine to have some kind of counseling or therapy, or this is unheard of?
Clearly, it's not routine. I think some places are further ahead than others and do have something in place, you know, but that's the minority. It's in the main, no, there's nothing much there. You're lucky if there's a nurse on hand to hold your hand, basically. It's not really recognized what's happening when somebody's given a diagnosis of cancer. It's a total shock to the system on every level.
Yeah, okay. So given the context that you're telling me, I don't think there's a role for psychiatry services, but definitely the role for counsellors who have the person-centred counselling approach, for example. And I think the most important thing, if I may say so, Robin, is for people to have a safe space where they can really share without holding back what they are experiencing given the diagnosis. I don't think traditional mental health services, need to be involved, but someone, some kind of services where, you know, the people, the counselors, the therapists, or the people who are supporting really gives the support, has some understanding of how to hold the space, and have that kind of training. I think that is definitely something I would say is needed for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, in some countries, it's talked about as a specialism called psycho-oncology, but I don't hear that word being used here particularly. I have occasionally, but not really. And it seems to be a bit of a specialism in a way, supporting somebody in that circumstance, and hence giving a particular label to it and a particular expertise. But something of that type certainly seems to be urgently needed, as far as I can tell. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. So, I love the statement that's on your website, holisticpsychiatryclinic.com. It says the Holistic Psychiatry Clinic grew out of a shared frustration and a shared conviction. Both of us had worked within NHS and private psychiatry for years and had seen too many patients managed rather than understood, maintained on medication rather than supported towards independence. So I really like that statement. It's very clear to me that what your view is there. But I wonder if you expand on all this and tell us a bit more about what led you to take off in another direction to the mainstream.
Well, thank you so much. Let me say this. There's something about what I really stand for is a humanness, is to really support the human being in front of us. And I think what led me to this, like an alternative way of doing mental health, doing psychiatry, is that I went on my own inner journey, because we all, you know, have a journey of self-discovery, or, you know, we ask the questions in like, okay, is this who I am? And so I think I was very lucky to go into personal development back in 2002. So I started going for conferences and self-help books, and I read Louise Hay books and all of that. Because I, you know, once you read it, it's like, oh, this is really nice. And then I decided to become a life coach in 2007, when health, you know, now we in the NHS, we hear about health coaches. Back then, coaching, even the term coaching was unheard of. Mm. But because of my curiosity of self-help and well-being, and I was a junior doctor at that time. I was a junior psychiatric trainee going through my training. And I also had my, you know, one foot in the NHS and another foot in the healing world, in the what can we do to empower ourselves. And I always had this in mind, Robin, that let me try this for myself. And if this approach helps me as a human being, then I can also take it to my patients.
Brilliant.
So that's always been my thing. Like, okay, let me experiment. And even now, like, I love reading. I love self-help. I look at how can I regulate my own nervous system? How do I, you know, all of this. So this has led me, I really think, to be a better psychiatrist, to see someone not just like someone is coming, not just as a patient who needs to be, okay, let's look at everything and try to diagnose you and medicate you. I think that's what the challenge is. Like you said, people have got a diagnosis of cancer. They are trying to make sense of cancer. How can we, and rather than seeing the person as, the cancer diagnosis, and you know, that's not who they are. How can we really like listen to the person? Because every person with a diagnosis of cancer is unique in their own right. We all are unique. So one person with a diagnosis of certain cancer and another person with the same diagnosis, they are going to have different trajectories in life. So there's something about that humanness, like that, you know, exploring, you know, their story and the narratives. And then how do we help them to, despite the diagnosis, how can we help them go beyond the diagnosis in a way? So I think for me, it's like a beyond any diagnosis. And I just fallen in love with my style of doing things. And I hope this gives you a sense of why I and my husband, he's also, you know, he's the co-founder. We have similar approaches and we say we align, we help, you know, we look at mind, body, spirit. It's not just mind and body, it's not just mental health and physical health. We are also exploring spirituality in the healing process.
Yeah, I noticed the term psycho-spiritual coaching that you've used. And yeah, I wanted to ask you a bit more about that in particular. You know, what does this look like?
So first of all, I think one of the things that I like to say to everyone is that, look, you're not broken. I think it's messy because you'll be surprised. You know, we know about a limiting belief, Robin, and I know I had it. I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
Many people have that story of or the belief that I'm not good enough. But we also have this when people have a diagnosis or, you know, and setbacks and trauma, they might come to the conclusion that somehow I'm broken. I'm not saying that that's what happens with people with cancer, but I definitely see it with people with mental health diagnosis and trauma and so on, and people feel that I'm broken. So one of the fundamentals for that our teaching is that, you may feel broken. That doesn't mean that you're broken. Yes, it doesn't mean that you didn't have trauma. You might have had trauma. You might have had all of this, but at a deeper level, who you truly are, you know, that core part of you can never be broken because that's formless. And that's, in a way, that's the spiritual essence. And this is, you can say, from Eastern philosophy, and, you know, people talk about, like, who is the I am? You know, what when you right. say I am this, but what's the I am? So for when I say psycho-spiritual coaching, there's a term I use. It's called mental wealth.
Yes, I saw that.
And I use that term mental wealth. So just to give people a curiosity, like, what does mental wealth mean? We have heard about mental health. What is mental wealth? And what should we do about it? And I say to people, it's like, look, mental wealth basically means that there's already wealth within us. Mental wealth means that we already have innate well-being at a deeper level. You know, we intuitively, we know what is good for us. And I also say that we have an innate capacity to be resilient despite what is happening. So when I say psycho-spiritual coaching, that's definitely not religious. I'm not religious at all. But I feel that when you say people have this existential crisis, and I'm assuming that someone who has suddenly given a diagnosis of cancer, suddenly do you ask, like, oh my goodness, am I going to die?
Inevitably, even when it's not that serious a diagnosis, cancer equals death to people, and they will probably have an existential crisis.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I would say the same happens to people with mental health struggles at some level.
Right.
You know, some people, then we ask those questions like, oh my goodness, what's happening to me? What is my life about? And I think many mental health crisis is existential crisis. People are thinking like, what is this all about? What's the meaning of life? And to me, that cannot be fixed by a medication. Medication can numb you. I mean, you know, we don't need to go into how medications work, but I know that medications are not a cure. I'm talking about all the psychiatric medications. No one can claim that medications are a cure. Medications can numb by experience. They might be helpful, especially in the short term. Long term, obviously, there are lots of problems with long-term use. But that cannot fix a existential crisis. And say, for example, and then the talking therapy, CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. Yes, it's good to make sense of your thoughts and explore and have a different perspective. But again, if someone is having a deep existential crisis, CBT might be just like a superficial thing. Imagine having right. cancer and someone, you being sent to a CBT therapist who is just trying to change your thinking. Like, come on, you know, there's something deeper going on here.
Right.
So for me, the psycho-spiritual coaching is just exploring the essence of who we are, and of course, the nature of thought, the nature of how our mind works, so that once people don't get so scared of their human experiences, the anger, the sadness, the fear, you know, and we have a different relationship with our emotions, with our thoughts. So that's what I tend to do with the psycho-spiritual coaching, to have a different experience, different relationship with our human experiences.
Fantastic. Sounds great.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so look, I want to ask you about the topic of your session at IPM, Integrative and Personalized Medicine. You were discussing there with Dr. Indra Bharathan the hugely important question of whether the most important factor in healing is not another protocol, but the practitioner themselves. So, you know, this is a kind of stuff that was definitely in the woo-woo sphere not that long ago. But I think now we can actually, we can see the effect of these things. They can be measured these days. They've moved into being science as well now. But it's a really compelling question that you were talking about. That's right in line with our own pursuit at the moment. We're looking into questioning the fundamentals of true healing at our conference this year, Reclaiming Our True Nature.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I'm just interested to hear, well, why were you wanting to explore this? I assume that was because, of course, you've had realizations from your own clinical experience of what is actually important in your patient's healing and well-being. So, yeah, please tell us.
Well, thank you so much, Robin. Yes, you're absolutely right. And even now, that would be considered woo-woo in the NHS.
By some people.
Yeah. And I think the conference you and I went to, the Integrative and Personalized Medicine Conference, in a way is what the future of medicine needs to be. Not like box thinking like, oh, only this will do. It's like, hey, what am I not seeing here? And definitely one of the things is the practitioner themselves. Like, imagine this, Robin. We could go and I could go and get a training to be, for example, EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Or I could go and learn some therapy and the latest, I don't know, try to be a psychedelic therapist or an ADHD coach. And I go through those modules and I do all the essay writing and everything that's needed. And then I get a certificate. And there are many people who are ADHD coaches, for example, or health coaches or therapists and counselors. And I would say it is less about the modality and more about the person who is delivering that modality. because it's not right to say, oh, CBT never works.
Right.
Because if, for example, someone like you or me were to even train now, I wouldn't train to be a CBT therapist. But even if we were to have CBT, for example, we will bring our humanness from where we are at the moment with all experience. We'll bring our humanness and maybe we even park the CBT to one side and just be with a person. But the tick box would be, oh, they had a CBT therapist.
Yes.
They did CBT and they are better.
Right.
No, it is less of the intervention and more of the energy of the practitioner that and the cost, the listening, the energy, then the listening, then the space for the person to just speak their truth. And then obviously with the guidance of the practitioner, you know, they just ask the questions and they come with their own realization, insights from within. And I think this is only, to me, I think let me put it this way, Robin. You can only take someone to the level of consciousness you are in. Say, for example, we had infinite level of consciousness, all of us. Like what we see, when I say level of consciousness, is our awareness. If someone had come to Dr. Rani Bora 10 years ago, they would have had a very different experience of me, honestly, because my understanding at that time was not that I was mean or I was like someone who did not want to help people. I help people my way, but my level of understanding and awareness was only up to a level. But where I am now, if someone was to come through my door, given what I know, I would be able to help them to like achieve like their whatever they come up with. I will be able to help them if they're ready to achieve more. And when I say achieve more, in terms of like why they come to me for. So I think we can only take people to how much work we have done ourselves. So I think when we say about that practitioner and energy and so on, the practitioner's inner work is so important. And you can do all kinds of inner work, but ultimately it is about that I have wisdom within me. I know, like, I don't have to, like, figure it all out. The answer will come, but I also need to take action. And I, like, the practitioner needs to know their own mental wealth. And they need to realize that no matter who is then coming to them also has that. Because we are all the same at a deeper level. Being level, we are all the same. So that's why I think, Robin, is why you came to me straight. I still remember. I did a talk. I came out, and then the next speaker went in. But you were the first one to come to me, and then you say, "Hey, let's be in touch because you might like this." So, what are you hearing in what I just said?
Well, yes, I like everything you just said, and it's a conclusion I came to myself in terms of. When I went to people for help years ago, that actually it wasn't to do with what particular thing they were doing. The good practitioners were all healers in my mind. They're just good at healing, you know, and you could be a practitioner of anything and it didn't mean you were particularly helpful. So that's something I've carried along for years. And I think one of the things I've heard in what you're saying is that what you're expressing to people who come to you is the confidence you have in what you found yourself for yourself. That confidence is something we pick up on as human beings quite easily, I think, and it transmits a certain sort of safety, if you like, that this person actually can help me. They know something. Yeah. And it's not an egoic confidence, which, you know, is a completely different kind of thing. It's a deep confidence, which has got ease in it. It's got a kind of relaxed confidence, which transmits to people. And I think, you know, they see, oh, this is somewhere I can let go. I can trust. And there's a place where I might find some answers. So and hence, as soon as they're in that frame of mind, they're ready for help.
So
yeah, it sounds brilliant what you're saying.
Beautiful. Thank you for reflecting back on that. And here's the thing, Robin, the other thing is that it's not like I'm done with my inner work. No, every day is a learning process. Whenever I say, sure, yeah, I think I have done it, I know that
I got it cracked.
Yeah, I know universe will send me like, okay, you think you are so good?
Yeah, right.
And my ego will get a bashing. And that happens. And it just, this work has allowed me to be a bit more humble. That's what I would say. And know that I don't know everything. And I am learning, Robin, from my patients. My patients' feedback, even the seemingly negative ones where people say, Rani, I don't think you listened to me. I said, oh my goodness, is that how I came across? Let me like slow down. Let me give you another session if you really felt that, because I see that there's every opportunity for each of us to be a better version of ourselves, no matter whether we have a cancer diagnosis or we are a practitioner trying to support someone. I think we can all learn something.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the words you used in what you just said was listening. And it is actually an extraordinary thing, listening. And when you experience somebody really paying attention, you realize how rare it is that people do really listen, in fact.
Yes.
And it is an experience being listened to. We had a great example of this. We had our online conference in May, and we had a chap on there called Raj Jana, who did this exercise with somebody randomly from the audience. It was this amazing lady, just said, yeah, okay, I'll do it. Came up on the panel with the rest of the speakers, and he just listened to her for 5 minutes live on this in this conference. It was an incredible experience, for not just for her but for all the viewers. You know, this was a wonderful thing, and it's really demonstrated the power of listening.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Say a bit more about listening.
That's so beautiful. And people might say, well, what's the technique he used? It's really interesting,
listening,
isn't
therapy.
It? And we, in at least in the my professional journey, because also I'm a coach, they talk about listening all the time. And see, here's a thing. There is something about doing listening. And the other, the distinction is between doing listening as a verb, as an action, and being a listener. And I'm putting those distinctions here because sometimes, people there's a term called active listening, and then people say, oh yes, active listening. I still remember, Robin, some time ago when I was in the NHS, I was invited I needed to go for a CPD event for motivational interviewing. And many people have heard the term motivational interviewing. And there was this exercise, an active listening. And we had to do two things. One is like we try, not listening, which is obvious. And then the other one is you really try hard to listen, you nod, and you pick up cues and say, to me, that was doing listening. I'm showing you, I'm demonstrating to you that I am a good listener.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So yeah, you said that. I remember that. So that's okay.
Yeah.
But I think there's a deeper dimension of listening, which is you know, people talk about agenda and so on. Of course, sometimes, you know, it's okay to have agenda, because as a psychiatrist, if someone comes to me, I have to have a rough idea as to where I'm heading. If I'm just listening and I say, okay, that's it. pay me this McBucks, and off you go. And they say, hey, like, come right. on, you know, what's my plan now? Like, I don't know. I just listen. So I think it's important to listen, and it's also okay to have an idea, a plan of some kind. So as it's fascinating, because I have learned, and I can only talk about my experience, that there are moments where I am like listening, I'm doing the active listening. I'm listening, I'm nodding, and I'm writing the note. But when I coach, the more I'm realizing, the more I slow down, the more I say there's time to cover everything, and I just give myself permission to truly listen, it's like my energy changes. That it's like I'm not just listening through my ears. My whole, like, I am really there with the person, holding that space for them. And people, it's fascinating. And maybe that's what happened. It's like the energy shift. The person knows that they have been listened to. They have been heard.
Yeah.
And I still might not have any answers. It's not about listening, doesn't mean that you know how to fix their problems. No, I might not have any clue, but that is so beautiful. And I would say listening, deep listening, can feel like a spiritual experience for some people.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It seems to be more of a being with someone than sort of anything to do with like active listening, you know, you were describing.
Yeah.
And it does meet a very deep human need for that kind of trusting intimacy. Yeah. And interestingly enough, even though, you know, you may not have any answers, people quite often find their own in those spaces, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the most important thing, right? Because, Robin, how many times have you maybe been to a doctor, or you know people who have been to the doctor, and the doctor has advised them what to do? I mean, I know, like, even my, there are advice, and I know what to do in a way to live a healthy lifestyle, for example. These are the, you know, most lifestyle, the lifestyle pillars, lifestyle medicine pillars, are in a way common sense, but they have got a lot of evidence base. So it is not like people don't know what to do. They might know what to do, but it's like something has to click from within.
Yes.
And something has to make sense, and for people to come up with an idea of how they are going to be, for example, doing a few more movements, because it has to come from, you know, something has to resonate at a deeper level. So you can call it insight. Sight from within. So when we all have insights, we all have new ideas come to us, new thoughts that come to us. And as a result of, maybe someone might have an insight just listening to you and me having this conversation, and they might have an aha moment for them. Now, that's inside, that's beautiful. That's like a seed being planted. And then once a seed is planted, and then we can water the seed, we can look after the soil, and basically we need to take some action. I would call it like energized action, something that we feel like true, and then we do it. And it's about the consistently doing something, even if it's a small practice of some kind, to deal with whatever is going on, or to handle any challenge going on in the moment.
Right, really interesting. I just wanted to ask you about, we were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, yeah, this is all woo-woo to some people, but actually it's not really, is it? There's now science, because we have ways of measuring the effect of lots of things that everybody thought were woo-woo. We can now measure them. Actually, having an effect on our immune system or on our genetics in some way. So we got the same science that has been used to largely support pharmaceutical-driven mental health. You could now apply to in this area as well, the same science. But it's not quite an equal playing field. What do you think are the chances are that the science will drive forward the use of other means outside of pharmaceuticals in order to help people with their mental well-being?
I think there has been a shift. There are things happening. And if you think about just a branch of medicine that has come up recently, which is lifestyle medicine, you know, when, you know, it's still not maybe like part of the medical school curriculum, but many doctors, for example, now are training as lifestyle medicine.
It's encouraging, isn't it?
Absolutely. So not everyone, but many GPs now are giving lifestyle prescriptions for things like type 2 diabetes and, you know, and you can say for prevention, hypertension and also mental health challenges. Do you know of Dr. Rangan Chatterjee?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Rangan Chatterjee is like Live Well, Feel Better podcast and his documentaries on TV. I think there are like celebrities like him who is challenging mainstream.
And he's driving it forward. Yeah. He's doing a great
absolutely.
Job.
yeah. And him and, you know, people you meet at the IPM, for example, the whole day and the advanced practitioners where people talking about, you know, beyond just the, you know, what the NHS or what the traditional medical paradigm might look like. So I think it will take time. And but rather than waiting for that to happen, I think the people or consumers, like the general population, needs to, rather than relying on the doctors to know the answers, is like looking at, okay, what are the options for me, and just being open and curious. But going back to your answer, I don't know when it's going to happen. And it might not, it's definitely not going to happen, I think, in my lifetime. But it's about the younger generation, the next generation. Someone very young might be listening to this. And then again, there are many Rangan Chatterjees evolving. And of course, there are many, many, many more than just Dr. Rangan Chatterjee. And I've been seeing so many speakers at the IPM conference that have been equally bold and doing their own thing. So I guess, you know, it's about a tipping point happening at some point, but I wouldn't wait because life is too precious.
Agreed.
And for us to do our thing. And your show, for example, your show is, again, adding to that. We are all doing our bits to raise the consciousness of the planet for people to look for. Of course, there will be pharmaceuticals, and there is definitely a role for
that.
But to also look at the informed consent, that's again something I'm hot on. People need to know what the alternatives are. People also need to know that, okay, what can I do now? I might have received this diagnosis and I could fear and like worry about it, or like maybe this is an invitation for me to start like living every single day as if this could be the best day of my life, something that I never thought about before. And many people say that. I'm sure you've come across people say, suddenly I realize the importance of my life.
Absolutely.
And what I need to do. And so it's a wake-up call, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is what I call the silver lining of this horrible thing called cancer, is that it does provide a wake-up call to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's surprising the number of people I've met in the last 20 years who will easily say, oh, yes, the best thing that ever happened to me was a diagnosis of cancer.
Wow.
Because it so completely changed their life for the better that they would never want to go back to who they were before.
Wow.
And so that's quite an opportunity, really. I think it bears looking at. I've struggled to think about ways in which, rather than, you know, this, we can actually help people to the realization that it can be a doorway and not just an absolute beast that ruins their life, that it can also be a doorway to something greater. How we can promulgate that idea, how we can make it accessible, how we can support people in accessing that. It's an interesting question. And, you know, we're constantly doing things to try and open up that area. Our conferences this year, when I started doing what we're doing, 20 years ago, it would be like it was the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. That was the sort of order of things. And definitely the spiritual was sort of given a nod to, but it was kind of like, yeah, nice to a sort of bit of icing on the cake, you know, over there. But you concentrate on the supplements and the diet and all this really. So the thing that's changed or is changing is that the spiritual, I think, has changed its position from being over there to being underneath everything else.
Yeah.
The foundation for everything else, and really do some immense attention if we're serious about gaining access to a life with real meaning and purpose, finding out who we are. Finding how to live in a way that gives us joy and to say meaning, and also access to the best of well-being that is possible given our circumstances. All those things are kind of like to do with paying attention to this realm of the spiritual. With what you were talking about, it's like paying attention to who is the practitioner rather than what they're doing. It's the same thing, really, yeah. Looking underneath. So, I think it's immensely important, and it's an investigation we need to focus on, a lot more, I think.
Yeah. And can I just say something here about what you said, especially in terms of the identity shift that has happened or needs to happen? So when you say that some people say this is the best, thing that happened, you can also call it a smelly gift. I have a term called smelly gift.
Yeah, that's
it
good.
It does not look like a gift. It's extremely smelly. And then we try to throw it away and then we fight with it. But it keeps coming back. And you say, no, it's to handle. And when after we registered and, cry and scream, when we start to have that courage to open it slowly, we find that actually this has been a life lesson in a way, and we can learn something even from this horrible, whatever experience. So that's one thing. The identity shift is like the old identity will die. Oh, this is who I am, and I can just go about and da 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 da, whatever it is. And it's a new identity of like, this is an opportunity for me to step into a new identity. And the identity can be, if you're not careful, the automatic identity could be one of a victim. Oh my goodness, and I just react to everything that's happening. Now what will happen? And I fear. So I use a word and a play of words called react versus create. And if you look at it, react and create, they have the same letters.
Interesting, yes.
Except that create has an extra E.
Okay.
Meaning to create, we need some extra energy. Right? So when we are a victim, we are reacting to life and saying, oh, why me? And so, of course, and it's okay to react, and we all will have emotions, and it's not about judging. It's just saying that, well, I just want to be open and honest and have that space to also ventilate what's going on for me. But we know that we can't just keep reacting. It will be, we can, but there will be implications to our health. Like our mental health would go down and down and down and down. But the create is, okay, given this is the problem or given this is the diagnosis, what would I like to see happen that I have some control over? So it's about taking back our agency. And it's like, what can I create? And someone might then come to you and say, Robin, help me. I'm struggling. What can I do? And the create doesn't mean like, oh, now suddenly like I am going to create a new body. No, of course not. Or like make the cancer cells disappear. It's like, given this is a situation, how would I like to create my day or my values or how to, create something or a wish list for me, like how I'm going to spend, every single day. So that, again, is like whenever we look at what we can do and that energy, it's like we are channeling more of the healing energy within all of us. And it might be something simple as just like, we're talking about listening. I would say, what about listening to nature? That's a fascinating thing, isn't it? It just came to me. People talk about going outside and just feeling like really calm. But again, nature speaks in silence. And I say nature reminds us of our true nature. And nature is naked. It's not wearing any makeup or anything, unlike human beings. It doesn't hide anything. The nature is just simple, pure life essence. So there's something when we go to like nature, we just feel that. It's like having a practitioner there who is not judging you, who is just there for you. And you can scream and you can hug the tree and whatever you do. I know I deviated from what we talked about, but I just wanted to give people the sense of how important we can like shift our identity and say like, actually, I can, you know, cry and get upset and release that energy. But also like, how can I utilize the time? Because the future is uncertain for everyone. I might not have a cancer diagnosis, but who knows when I'm going to die? I could drop dead tomorrow. Yeah, we are not immortal. So there's something about we all have a experience of life, but we can also create how we want to experience life despite all the challenges, despite all the things that has not gone our way. I think that is really, really powerful and empowering for people. It is for me.
Fantastic. That's an amazing day to finish on because we're out of time. What a fascinating chat. Thank you so much. I've so much enjoyed talking to you, Rani. And I love everything you said. It's completely in line with my thinking. And I'm glad I accosted you.
And I'm glad that I said yes. This has been a lovely conversation we had. Thank you so much for asking me. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Inspiring stuff. Find out more about Dr. Rani Bora on her website, holisticpsychiatryclinic.com, where you can also pick up a copy of her booklet called Help for When Life Feels Heavy, Practical Steps to Reclaim Your Resilience. And during the interview, you heard me referring to the Yes to Life conference on the 26th of September, Reclaiming Our True Nature. This is an in-person event in central London, and it promises to be an exciting exploration of the nature of healing and well-being, led by a team of world-class speakers, including Dr. Nature Winters, Dr. David Hamilton, Dr. Leo Prunboom, and James Maskell, and all introduced by Dr. Sam Watts. It will also feature a question and answer session with the four men who are at the heart of Yes to Life's Four Men campaign. Four exceptional survivors working to highlight the potential of integrative oncology for men with cancer. Find out more and book your place at conference.yestolife.org.uk. Thanks for listening today. It's been great to have you join me, and I do hope you'll want to listen again next week when I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.